Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I got to tell you, it is good to be back home, our true home and Dog Nation World Headquarters. And I like to think of Athens as my home away from home. For many of you, you get to call the Classic City home, and you're lucky to be able to do that. We've had a great time in Athens the last couple of days doing the show out of doors with the sunshine behind us. Little wind one day, little sunshine yesterday, but we braved the elements around here. I even wore a hat on yesterday's program to try to keep my hair from flying all over the place. But either way, it was a fun last couple of days. But there's something about being back in your, you know, your own home again, sort of, you know, metaphorically speaking, sleeping in your own bed once again. And it feels good to be back here in the regular desk, regular microphone, regular setup. And it's good to have you on the program today. A couple of things that are coming up. One of the things I've heard loud and clear from many of you is you like hearing from the big names in the program. You've enjoyed, for instance, yesterday when we heard from Jake Brohm and we heard from some of these guys. Well, we're going to do that more for you today because we had a chance yesterday as part of the Georgia Pro Day, and really the reason we were at Georgia Pro Day a day ago was to get a chance to talk to a lot of the guys going through that. Now, it's hard not to root for these guys in the midst of that moment where they're trying to make a final impression on these NFL scouts to put themselves in the position to have a professional football career. It's hard not to root for those guys in that instance, and it was fun to watch all of that. But the real value for us is to get a chance to talk to them when that's all said and done, and talk to them about their time at Georgia and what they think about the next crop of Georgia guys. So we'll do some of that coming up later on. I think three really fun interviews with some guys that have put their life on the line for the Georgia Bulldogs and now will become like the rest of us, big fans of this program moving forward. That's going to be interesting. Something else, though, off the top of the program that I want to make sure we do. And I guess I'm probably going to be guilty of maybe reading too much into some of this kind of stuff, but there have been a lot of big headlines coming off of what Kirby Smart said over the last couple of days. The start of spring practice always brings you some of that. What are the main stories that everybody's paying attention to? But then below the surface on some of that, there is always, to me, some interesting stuff. Let's face it. For those of you who've listened to me for a long time or you ever seen me, I'm a little bit of a peculiar guy. I'm a little bit of a weird guy. Sometimes I'm attracted more to the stuff that floats below the surface more so than I am the big sort of big story that everybody's paying attention to. There were a couple of things this week that Kirby Smart has said that I think are really worth paying attention to. So I wanted to get us started today by talking about some of the things that you might have missed. Now, I will grant you, when it comes to this first piece of audio from Kirby, this may be a degree of wishful thinking. But that doesn't mean that I'm wrong. You know, Kirby, when he had his initial press conference on Tuesday, one of the things they went into detail of, okay, here's kind of the big picture scenario, and he talked about what's going on defense. We'll have more on that coming up in a moment. But he also talked about on offense, and he talked about the newcomers and what he's kind of interested in seeing from them. And then he let something slip about the wide receiver position, which gives me, and I'm presuming you, a lot of hope for what we might see later on this summer, later on this fall. This may be a little too much wishful thinking, maybe a little too much reading between the lines, but I'm sticking with my story on this. Here is Kirby, I think, foreshadowing something that ought to make fans of Dominic Blaylock or fans of George Pickens, the two incoming freshman wide receivers for this summer, kind of exciting. Here's what Kirby said about the wide receiver position when he kicked off spring practice on Tuesday.
I'm really excited about seeing the new wideouts go out and compete and play. And unfortunately, there are no early guys in at that position, so we'll get to see a lot of them in fall camp. But there's a lot of guys who've been here that haven't had an opportunity to really go out and play at the forefront and being thrust to the forefront. So that's a big position of need for us, and we're going to get to watch those guys compete.
So am I wrong if I take that to say that when you hear Kirby Smart speak, it sounds to me a little bit like he thinks that Blaylock and Pickens have a chance to be a part of this discussion. He thinks that Blaylock and Pickens have a chance to maybe make a name for themselves come summer. Now, for the most part, normally when we have freshmen who pop in their first year on campus, for a lot of those guys, it is going through the paces during spring practice. Those early practices and really the workouts that lead to spring practice sometimes that's the pathway these guys follow to get on the field and be a part of the team and a significant contribution in their first year on campus. But just given the talent level that Blaylock possesses, given the talent level that we've seen from George Pickens, given what he brings to the table, it's easy to imagine they could come in the summertime and still find themselves in a conversation to be on the field contributing and playing, especially by the time that Georgia gets to its pivotal games, you know, week four against Notre Dame and beyond. You think that by that point, Pickens and Blaylock both could potentially be a part of that conversation. It sounds like Kirby Smart believes that too. And that, as a fan, I have to say, kind of gets me a bit excited. Now, I'll also add to that that Kirby, you know, is also talking about some of the guys who've maybe been on campus who we just haven't seen a ton from yet, or we've only seen them in limited roles. And obviously, that's going to be a major competition this spring. This is a very deep position group right now in terms of numbers. We don't yet know who's going to stack up and step up in place of the departed Riley Ridley, the departed Terry Godwin, the departed Mecole Hardman. All three of those guys are going to try to have NFL careers. We don't know who is going to step up, but the one thing we've seen from George in the past, it's not always the five-star or the very high four-star name who ends up doing that. Tyler Simmons, I think, exceeded expectations a year ago, and there's probably a lot of examples of that over the course of time. So as I'm thinking about Pickens and Blaylock and everybody else, let's not forget about Trey Blount, who's been there waiting his turn. Let's not forget about, you know, Kyrus Jackson, who himself was a pretty high recruit, but you probably didn't see as much of him as you might would have wanted to last year during his freshman year. Let's not forget about him having a chance to do some of that kind of stuff this season as well. So I thought it was really interesting from Kirby Smart on that, at least potentially foreshadowing a bit the fact that come summertime, that wide receiver competition may feature two freshmen then who are not here now, and that the competition for wide receiver ain't over until these guys get a chance to have their say. And for somebody who roots for both Blaylock and Pickens, I got to tell you, that made me a little bit excited. Something else that Smart said this week that I don't think necessarily got enough attention, and maybe it's not that big of a deal, but I did find it interesting because of what it says with the current landscape of college football. And I've said before that they are seemingly no shortage of former Saban assistants or hard-driving coaches that came from somebody else's coaching tree to be head coach right now. But the one, I don't want to say crisis, but certainly if you're a head coach looking to fill some of these positions, it may feel like a crisis. The one thing there are not enough of right now are really good position coaches who can recruit at the level that Kirby Smart demands, and the competition that he faces from Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee and from Nick Saban in Alabama and from, you know, Gus Malzahn, Ed Orgeron, SEC West foes, a little bit from Dan Mullen in Florida. There is probably a bit of a shortage when it comes to the assistant coaches who can round out these rosters right now. Georgia had to go out and fill a position coach need this offseason. It turned to Charlton Warren, kind of a power move, stealing him from Florida. That was interesting to hear Kirby Smart give a little backstory on his relationship up to the point of hiring with Warren, or in this case, the lack of relationship with Warren. This is kind of interesting stuff. Let me let you hear some more of this.
I did not know Charlton. I mean, we played against him when he was at North Carolina, and we were here in our first game, but I didn't personally know him. Had heard a lot of good things about him. I know that there were some coaches there at Tennessee that were going to try to retain him at one time when Butch got let go. I just heard good things in the profession, talked to a lot of different people about him, and once you did the research, he really stood out as a guy that we thought would bring a lot of discipline and great demeanor to our secondary, and it's a guy that I wanted to pick and think a lot of him.
So I think it's interesting that Kirby ends up making a high-profile hire of a coach that he really didn't know that well before the hire's made. And it's hard to know what was going on behind the scenes with all that. There were plenty of rumors and plenty of reports, and it's sometimes hard to separate fact from fiction and all that, but you do get a little bit of a picture what this high-wire act might have been like. There had been some reports, even from our own Mike Griffith at DogNation.com, that Kirby had some interest in Derek Ansley, the Raiders defensive back coach last year. He's now Tennessee defensive coordinator. It's easy to connect dots in your mind. Who knows if this is true, but it's easy to connect dots in your mind of Kirby wants to bring him in as a position coach. He gets the chance to have a better title at Tennessee, and now all of a sudden Georgia's moving on to a plan B. We don't know if that's indeed what happened, but I do think by hearing this description of having to go out and steal one of your top rivals' defensive backs coach, a guy that you didn't even really know before this, I think it shows you the challenges of filling out a coaching staff right now. The one thing that I do believe, though, is that Smart's right when he says ultimately Georgia got the right person for the job, or at least a very good candidate to fill this role, and it is that background in military. We've highlighted that about Warren before, the fact that he brings that no-nonsense approach of having been a guy that legitimately climbed pretty high there at the Air Force Academy and has that part of his life on his resume, which I think is really important. I think he's going to end up doing big things for George, and I think he's going to be a welcome addition to this coaching staff. It's an interesting path that you follow get there, though, which I thought was kind of unique. Let me also mention one more thing here off the top on Dog Nation Daily today that Kirby Smart said that probably didn't get enough attention this week. And I'll admit, for me, this is one of those, I guess, personal issues that I just can't quite get over. I continue to be a bit upset about the way that when the scheduling change was made with the Georgia-Auburn game for 2020 being moved up in the month of October, I said at the time, I don't know what Georgia's getting out of this. And a lot of people stepped up and said, well, if Kirby Smart doesn't have a problem with it, then BA, you shouldn't have a problem with it either. And I said, well, let's wait and hear what Kirby Smart really does feel about this. Because when UGA President Jerry Moorhead was quoted, he made it sound as if Kirby Smart had signed off on this. UGA Athletic Director Greg McGarity kind of said the same thing. But tell me if I'm wrong. When Kirby Smart was asked directly about his feelings on this, now he didn't want to speak too much about it because he's worried about the 2019 schedule. But when he's directly asked his feelings on how do you feel about the upcoming change to the Georgia-Auburn schedule in 2020, moving out of the month of November where it has been to the month of October, seemingly as a way of helping Auburn maintain a degree of schedule balance, how do you feel about that? Listen carefully to these words. I don't think Kirby Smart says that he likes it. Tell me if I'm wrong. Here's Kirby.
I don't think you can realistically judge any schedule until you see it in its totality. So we haven't seen the SEC schedule for 2020. And to be honest with you, I am a lot more worried about 2019 than I am 2020. So that's our focus here, and that's the main thing we're concerned with.
I mean, am I wrong? And I joked about reading too much into stuff, but Kirby's got a chance to say, yeah, this is something that we wanted too. Y'all are making too big of a deal about this. Playing the game in October is fine with us. And that's not what Kirby says. He says, I mean, if I'm hearing him correctly there, he says, I'm going to withhold judgment until we see the rest of the schedule. In other words, that there's more for him to know before he can truly sign off on this. I mean, compare Kirby's words there to the words from President Moorhead, Athletic Director McGarity, on this in the past. And to me, they don't line up. I'll let you weigh in on that subject yourself. But to me, there's a lot more in this story that we need to learn. And that's one of those things that kind of flew under the radar with Kirby Smart this week that I thought was interesting. Either way, as I said before, it was really fun to be in Athens over the last couple of days. I love the idea of having spring practice back. I love the build-up towards G-Day. It was fun seeing the old guys from the 2018 team there for a pro day yesterday. There is a great vibe around Athens right now. As Kirby Smart alluded to, a lot of the spring sport teams are doing really well. It's just a really, really great time to be around UGA. Spring practice is a big part of it. And I got to tell you, I am really proud of the fact that Dog Nation's right there at the center of it all. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Good to be with you. As I said earlier, back live in the friendly confines of our Dog Nation World Headquarters studio, live on video today, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. Love being there on the radio in the Classic City each and every day, even when we're not in Athens in person. And, of course, in podcast form, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, where we post the show each and every day. It is great to have you and be a part of all of this, and it's great to bring you spring practice coverage brought to you by our friends at Harris Cherokee Casinos, because when you're ready for the other kind of gaming, and you know what I'm talking about here, Harris gives you two great options. Harris Cherokee Valley River Casino and Hotel, located in Murphy, North Carolina. It's convenient to Atlanta, and boy, is it. It offers 300 hotel rooms, slots, blackjacks, roulette, and plenty of fun. And also, Harris Cherokee Resort, located in Cherokee, North Carolina, features over 1,000 rooms. It is a beautiful, big-time resort. I've been there, and I love it. It's just less than 3 hours away from Atlanta, and has everything you'd expect from a world-class resort. 3,500 games, World Series of Poker events, a spa, golf, concerts, plenty of dining options. They got great restaurants there. I can speak to that personally. No matter where you play, Harris Cherokee Casinos has you covered. So please go to this website. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. Let me give you the website one more time for the folks who are listening via radio or podcast. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. Please make sure you check that out. Harris Cherokee Casino, bringing spring practice coverage to us today here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, let me set the stage what the rest of the show is going to be. later on today, I am going to follow up on something we talked about yesterday. The seeming dissatisfaction from some Georgia fans about maybe the change they were hoping to see from the Georgia offense shifting from Jim Chaney a year ago to James Coley here in 2019. Maybe that's not going to quite work out the way that some fans wanted. I think it's a really interesting debate. We actually had a long debate about this off the air yesterday in one of our breaks on Before the Hedges with our buddy Jeff Sintel and our buddy Connor Riley. So we'll do some of that kind of stuff on the air here in just a moment. I also said that we were going to hear from some of the Georgia players who went through spring practice, or I should say the pro day yesterday, their thoughts on their UGA careers and what's next for them in the NFL and the Bulldogs. We will do that coming up in just a moment. Let me also get ready for our radio audience to kind of roll into. We'll do Around the Doghouse here as we kind of roll on here in Dog Nation Daily. So let me take a quick pause for our radio audience to kind of catch their breath for a minute. And we will be right back on radio with more Dog Nation Daily coming up right after this. And back here on the program, Dog Nation Daily, podcast, radio, video, everything else in between. Before we get to what I think is a really good crop of interviews, let me go around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, brought to you by our friends at Online Trading Academy. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting from Kirby Smart when he spoke to reporters on Tuesday, we did a good bit of this in the program, at least at one point this week, kind of getting more into some of the stuff with the havoc rate and kind of what's going on with Georgia there when it comes to that. Getting at the quarterback, as J.R. Reed explained to us, that's sacks, that's pass breakups, that's tackles for loss. That's something that Georgia wants a lot more of in 2019. And Kirby Smart went into some detail. I gave this to you earlier in the week as a way of setting up this conversation. Let me give you a reminder of exactly what Kirby Smart said about that when he spoke on this subject earlier this week. Here's Kirby Smart once again.
We want to increase our havoc rate on defense. That's one of the main target areas. We want to be more disruptive. And the only way you're going to be more disruptive is practice being disruptive. So we've got to do that. We've got to create more lost yardage plays, more negative situations, and something we've really harped on. We've done studies on the top 10 teams last year in havoc, and we're trying to do some of the things they do, and we're trying to put guys in positions to do that.
So as we explained before, havoc rate's not just some, you know, generic term, at least in terms of the way that's been defined by stat gurus like Bill Conley from footballstudyhall.com. It is that combination of sacks and tackles for loss and passes broken up, and that the way that the stat guys kind of judge this is the percentage of those kinds of plays that you have for defense altogether. And Kirby Smart said that over the course of the offseason, they've spent some time studying the top 10 teams in terms of havoc rate from a year ago. So I thought it might be interesting to add some more context to this by also sharing just some who those top 10 teams were last year, according to Bill Conley, footballstudyhall.com. So if you're watching on video, I'll show this to you. Here is the top 10 in terms of the overall percentage of havoc rate type plays. Now, as I told you yesterday, George was just 15.6% on this year ago. That was just 75th in the country. Here's the top 10. Believe it or not, Miami is number one on this list, which to me is a huge surprise. I guess that speaks to the job that Manny Diaz was doing there as defensive coordinator. It's Alabama 2, it's Clemson 3, Michigan State 4, Texas A&M 5. You've got Mississippi State and UAB both tied at 6, Penn State at 8, Kentucky and Utah both tied at number 9. Now let me make one quick point about this before we move on and let you hear from Jonathan Ledbetter on this subject. When I look at this top 10, I won't pretend to know exactly what Miami and Michigan State were doing to get to the quarterback. I won't pretend to know that because I wasn't watching all their games. Same with UAB and Utah. I can't necessarily tell you what those programs were doing to get to the quarterback as well as they were. But the other teams that we did see a lot more of, being in the backfield, getting tackles for loss, it becomes really easy to understand. You know, Mississippi State, for instance, which is on this list, they had two great defensive linemen. Montez Sweat is going to have a long NFL career. Jeffrey Simmons may be the best recruit to have ever signed at Mississippi State. So the fact that that program had a lot of, quote, havoc rate stuff, the fact they were sacking quarterbacks and getting tackles for loss, that's not a huge surprise when it comes to the elite nature of the players that were playing there on the front seven for Mississippi State. I think you'll say the same thing about Kentucky as well. This was a Kentucky team this year that may have had as many individual game-changing defensive players as any Kentucky teams had in my lifetime. They were in the top 10 of that list that I just shared a moment ago. You think about Allen, who was SEC Defensive Player of the Year, going to be a longtime NFL guy. Cash Daniel, who was impactful in the Kentucky win against Florida. Those individual names, I believe, is what led to the havoc rate for Kentucky. Sacks, tackles for loss, and activity in the backfield. Obviously, we know about the defensive line for Clemson. No surprise they're on there. Same thing for Alabama. Think about, though, when you watched Alabama, whether it be the SEC championship against Georgia or in the season leading up to that game. Think about the individual moments that a guy like Quinnen Williams had, the way that he brought that interior pass rush and was just a force to be reckoned with all season long. I believe when Kirby Smart says, we're studying those top 10 teams, the teams that were better than us at getting into the backfield and being a disruptive kind of defense, we're studying what they're doing. And I understand that's what Kirby Smart is going to need to do. But my assumption is when these smart football minds on the Georgia defensive coaching staff, when they look into this more, my guess is the thing they're going to keep coming back to, and I believe they probably already know this, but my guess is the thing they're going to keep coming back to is that getting into the backfield and sacking quarterbacks, pressuring quarterbacks, tackling ball carriers in the backfield for tackles for loss, this is about individual defensive players winning their one-on-one battle with the guy that's trying to block them, more so than it is about some sort of scheme or gimmick that you can employ that's going to juice your numbers there in that regard. Because, listen, as we've said before, you can make your sack numbers go up by just blitzing seven guys every single time, but your pass yardage allowed numbers are going to go way down. Georgia really good a year ago at not giving up big plays. Well, guess what? If you start gimmicking up your pass rush, that number is not going to be the same thing in 2019. That for me, Georgia being better in this regard is about having individual guys who step up and do that. And for what it's worth, a guy who talked on this subject with us a bit yesterday was a former Georgia defensive end, Jonathan Ledbetter, now on his way to the NFL. And you can see this entire interview as a part of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, which we did on the streets of Athens yesterday. And Ledbetter talked to us, and one of the things I talked to him about was, hey, how do you feel about the fact that Georgia's going to be doing things apparently a little different in this regard in 2019? After all, Ledbetter said at the NFL Scouting Combine a few days ago that Kirby came to them last year and said, guys, we got to increase our sacks. We got to do better in that regard. Well, how do you feel as a former defensive end or a current defensive end, former Georgia player, that's going to be such a point of emphasis for Georgia this season? I thought the Ledbetter gave a great answer. Here's Ledbetter on that.
I mean, you know, I'm just kind of mad that, you know, he's doing it when I left. You know, I could have got in there and hopped in on some sacks. But, you know, my time is up. I'm happy for these guys coming up, man, and they're hungry. You know, they got fast guys off the edge. And, you know, I don't want to give them too much, you know, secret sauce. You know, I don't want to, you know, spoil anything that Georgia has coming up, especially not giving anything to our opponents. Because, you know, I'm still a dog for life, you know, no matter where I end up. But it is definitely going to get crazy on that defense. And those boys are going to be hunting. They're going to be hunting every down.
Let me try to ask a question you will answer then. You know, in the past, Kirby has said, we want to rush four guys better.
So that's Jonathan Ledbetter. And you can hear actually the full interview from Before the Hedges yesterday and kind of get into more of what Ledbetter had to say after that, because I went into discussion in detail with him on, so does this mean you're in a blitz then? Is that something you're going to do to, or you think George is going to do to create this additional pass rush? And Ledbetter was pretty clear based on some of the stuff that Kirby Smart said in the past that, listen, there may be some times you dial that up. Obviously, as a defensive coordinator, you want to keep the opposing offense guessing. We all get that. Dan Lanning and Lynn Schumann are going to be doing a lot of that this season. But this is mainly about those, as I said before, those individual battles being won by the four pass rushers that you're sending. When you look at the talent, whether it be from that 2018 class or the newcomers, including Nolan Smith and Jermaine Johnson are going through spring practice right now. When you look at what's available for Georgia, the opportunity to do that would seem to be there. And I, for one, think it's really exciting that Kirby Smart's drawing such finely drawn parameters around what success for his defense looks this season. He's being very specific. This is not generalities and coach speak of, as long as we win the game, everything's fine. That's not what he's saying right now. He's saying, no, we don't want to just be a defense that limits the points being scored. We don't want to just be a defense that bends but doesn't break. We want to go out there and actually break the offense. We don't go out there and change possessions or change the tone and the tenor of a game by how we go out and attack. I think that's a really interesting thing to say from Kirby Smart, and it's great to hear Jonathan Ledbetter's thoughts on that as well, and a big prediction from him about what he thinks this Georgia defense is going to do in 2019. That's pretty fun as well. It's Around the Doghouse here, brought to you by Online Trading Academy, where students learn a step-by-step approach to trading and investing. Classes cover a spectrum of trading styles and asset classes. It's in the classroom and it's online. So make a decision to invest in yourself today. Listen, you want to make money in the markets? You want to set your family up for success in generations to come? The decisions you make now benefit you 20 years from now. There is no better investment than the decision to invest in yourself, teaching yourself the kind of training that's appropriate for learning how to make these markets work in your favor. And listen, that's something we all need more of, and Online Trading Academy provides it. So please check them out online. The website, to remember, is Trading Academy. That's trading with a D, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. All right, let me move on here on Dog Nation Daily, because as promised, I want to continue our spring practice coverage brought to you by Harris Cherokee in North Carolina with a couple of really good interviews, some great stuff that we have had a chance to catch up with over the course of the last couple of days. One of these in particular I really enjoyed. Boy, it seems like Terry Godwin has just been a mainstay around the Georgia program for quite some time. And we had a chance to talk to him yesterday about a couple of different things. First of all, his own memories of his Georgia career, and you better believe he's got a lot of them after 4 years on campus. But in particular, also the role that he played in helping other Georgia receivers, including Mecole Hardman, who, if you saw the interview with Mecole on Before the Hedge was presented by Kroger yesterday, you know that Mecole really credits Godwin with getting him to the point where he is now, helping him learn the wide receiver position. Had a chance to ask Terry about what that was like for him, and it's a great interview with a former Georgia receiver, now Terry Godwin, on his way to the NFL. Hope you enjoyed today as a part of Dog Nation Daily.
I mean, it was great. Just seeing the guy with a lot of speed and a lot of potential come into that room, I knew that he would be something special. And the same thing Malcolm Mitchell did with me my freshman year, that's what I did with him and Riley. I mean, just pushing them to be the best they can be and instilling them everything they needed to know. I mean, if he asked me a question, I'm there to help. So I'm basically like a coach out there on the field for him.
Kirby talked to a lot of reporters yesterday, and a lot of receiver questions came up. There's a lot of receivers that have to be replaced, as you know, from last year's team. Have you talked to these guys? And if you did talk to that next crop of receivers, what would you tell them, maybe similar to what you said to Mecole in the past?
No, I haven't talked to them yet, but some of the guys was in the room when I was there. And, I mean, like I said earlier, do the same thing that got you here. I mean, just always chase that perfection. You can never be too perfect on anything.
How different is it working out here in front of the NFL teams versus the combine?
Well, to me, it's not any different. I mean, when the lights go on or when the cameras come out or anything like that, I'm always at my best. I try to be at my best, and I love to be perfect. So,
I think some of the other guys were more comfortable because Georgia guys really didn't fare that well in Indianapolis. I mean, obviously you and Mecole did, but there were some times from other guys that seemed uncharacteristic.
I mean, I feel like everybody did great at the combine. I mean, a lot of guys probably didn't get the numbers at the 40 that they wanted, but as far as drills and everything, I feel like everybody killed it. I mean, that's what we're known for, going out there working hard. I mean, they came out here and they probably better their times. So,
what will you remember most about your Georgia career, and how do you hope to be remembered by fans after the last 4 years here?
I remember most, I had to say my one-hand catch at Notre Dame. Yeah. And by the fans, I probably had to say my smile and just my character.
So I think that's really good stuff with Terry Godwin there. And one of the things we joke about from time to time around here is that there are certain things, if you do them in a Georgia uniform, you're going to show up in paintings for the rest of your life. Our buddy David Green knows about that. I mean, how many people have an oil painting of him throwing a touchdown to either Michael Johnson in 2002 or Bron Haynes in 2001? You do that kind of stuff, you just have a chance to live forever in UGA lore. And that one-handed catch that Terry Godwin made against Notre Dame is another example of that. He'll be remembered forever around Dog Nation because of that. And that is a justifiable bit of praise for Godwin, who gave it his all in a UGA uniform and helped Georgia win an SEC championship in 2017. That is quite a legacy that he leaves behind. And here on Dog Nation Daily as well, I also want to catch up with one of his also teammates there in that wide receiver core, and that's Riley Ridley. We had a chance to watch very closely yesterday these receivers go through their paces. I thought they all had a really great day, showed off a lot of athleticism for those NFL scouts, and the guy from that group will probably be drafted highest is Ridley. He's learned a lot from Godwin over the years. He's also learned from his brother a bit as well, Calvin, who's kind of paved the way for him in the NFL. If you enjoyed the conversation with Godwin, you'll enjoy this with Riley Ridley, too.
To be able to block, to be able to be a physical guy, have reliable, like make my coaches and my teammates rely on me and depend and believe in what I can do. But like you said, we ran a lot here, and that just transitioned to the NFL, being a physical guy, being able to open lanes for running backs.
What's Cortez Hankton been like?
Been great. He taught me how to grow in the football sense and sense of world, and just learn how to learn football. Those are things he demanded out of us, learn how to learn football.
What would you say to future wide receivers? Georgia signed a couple really good ones in the class of 2019 about the pathway to Georgia, to the NFL, when, let's face it, a lot of guys do want 1,000 yards. They want to catch touchdowns a lot. What would you say about how Georgia can prepare for the NFL, even if it doesn't always give you some of those things?
Right, it's hard work. You want to work as hard as you can. I can't speak on other organizations, but I can speak on Georgia. And one of the things that you want to do as a receiver, you want to come in, be able to block and play special teams. You want to separate yourself from any other receiver. That's just catching the ball. You want to be able to block, play special teams, and catch the ball, and you'll be all around player here at Georgia.
I'm sure you've been asked this question a million times, but having a brother who's gone through this, I would imagine that makes this a lot easier, right?
It makes it easier, but it's my journey. Like my brother, he's always going to let me take my journey in my way, but he's just going to push me to go the right way. There's only one way to success, and that's the way you want to go. With my brother in my corner, that's the way he's pushing me.
A few friendly wagers maybe in the future when Georgia plays Alabama with you too?
I mean, I put that stuff behind me, you know. But, you know, I'm always going to be a dog for life. And whenever the dog's on the field, I'm representing that red and black.
Really good stuff from Riley Ridley, who I think is going to have a chance at a great NFL career. And it was really fun to be with him yesterday and be a part of all that and watch how all that plays out. And all of these guys, their thoughts about the next generation of Georgia football going through spring practice right now. It's our spring practice coverage brought to you by Harris Cherokee Casinos there in Murphy, North Carolina, and in Cherokee, North Carolina as well. We appreciate Harris being a part of our spring coverage here on Dog Nation Daily. Later on in the program, we're going to hear another great conversation with former Georgia linebacker Nate Drespatrick. Fun to catch up with him as he looks back on his UGA career and what's next from him. Really good stuff on that. But before that, let's get you up to date on everything happening around the rest of the SEC.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Let me say one more thing about Riley Ridley before we kind of move off that subject. You know, one of the things that he talked about, Mecole Hardman talked about, if you saw that interview on Before the Hedges yesterday, this level of comfort that they have been forced to have with how they were used in the Georgia offense. I even talked to Kirby Smart about this yesterday as well. That stat that we gave you on Dog Nation Daily not too long ago about the fact that Ridley, who you see on your screen if you're watching some video right now, that Ridley could become the first receiver since 2008 to be drafted in the top 50 overall without having a 600-yard receiving season while in college. It speaks well of the team concept that Georgia puts in play. Certainly you feel pretty good about that. But at a certain point, I think a lot of Georgia fans also wrestle with when you have these really elite wide receivers, these, you know, Hardman and Ridley both could go in the second round. Godwin could play and be on an NFL roster. And you wonder, did Georgia do enough with those guys while they were on campus? Now, the retort to all that is always going to be, yeah, but B.A., if you're giving more touches to the receivers, you're taking them from the running backs. Is that really what you want to do? And that's a fair question to ask. That's a fair conversation and discussion to take place. But when you look at the way that national champions have utilized both elements of an offense, really good running games, but also finding a way to be dynamic with the passing game, that's something that Georgia's going to wrestle with throughout the rest of this spring practice and going into 2019 as well. All right, let me talk about SEC stuff for a moment. And you may have seen what we're going to call, I guess, humorously, Shirtgate here, where New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick goes to Alabama Pro Day earlier. Do we have the photo of this? Can we show this? Yeah, so here's Belichick at the Alabama Pro Day wearing the crimson shirt with the Alabama A on it. I realize if you're not watching a video, you don't get a chance to see this. So he's doing that there. Yesterday, he comes to Georgia's Pro Day, and he's not wearing the Georgia gear. He's just wearing Patriots gear. Kirby got asked about this, and to me, this is all really fun and funny. And, you know, I am personally of the belief that there has to be some sort of backstory behind the shirt there at Alabama, and my guess is it's not Belichick lost his luggage at the Tuscaloosa airport or the Birmingham airport. My guess is that's not what went down there. I mean, we all remember what Belichick said about Georgia back during the week of the Super Bowl. He talked about how well Kirby Smart's program does at preparing guys for the NFL, and obviously Belichick can speak to that given the fact that he's got Sony Michel carrying the ball for him and Isaiah Wynn coming off an injury that should be a pivotal part of the offensive line moving forward. David Boss Andrews, that's pre-Kirby, but that's a former Georgia guy, also in that Patriots roster as well. So, listen, Belichick knows the Georgia guys and threw Kirby a compliment. Well, if you're Saban, you can't let that stand. You got to fight back against that. And I think all of this is really funny and in fun. And, you know, maybe it's just a gigantic coincidence. But knowing the way that the recruiting wars can kind of work sometimes and how much posturing there is and planning and some would even say conniving, knowing all of that, it feels like there was some sort of level of intentionality when it comes to Belichick wearing the Alabama shirt. If you're Georgia yesterday, you don't have to copy what Nick Saban and Alabama do with the Georgia G on the Belichick shirt. You don't have to do that. Belichick's already thrown the compliment the away of Georgia, and he did it Super Bowl week. So ultimately, what Belichick says about Georgia Super Bowl week gets more media coverage, more impressions, if you will, than Belichick wearing the Alabama A yesterday. But I thought this was kind of fun. Florida gets a commitment, 2020 wide receiver Jeremiah Johnson. He is from the state of Georgia. He's from Clinch County. And, you know, I don't know Johnson as a player. There's a very good chance he goes on to have a great career. He looks like a really good high school player. But it's worth noting that when Georgia's going wide receivers right now, its wide receiver conversation is almost solely out of the state of Georgia. And it's almost solely of the really, really high five-star variety. Now, Jermaine Burton's not a five-star guy right now. But I believe he's like the number 35 prospect. He's like he's a you know, very highly rated top 100 prospect. Burton has a chance to be a five-star before it's all said and done. Rakeem Jarrett, who there's been a lot of buzz of as of late, he is a five-star. And, you know, I won't pretend to tell you that any of those guys are going to have better careers than Johnson. I don't know that. But for the Florida fan who wants to talk about the, you know, the Gators creeping up and catching up close to Georgia, I think there's another example here when it comes to recruiting. Right now, Georgia and Florida are just chasing very, very different kinds of players. For the most part, Florida is getting in on recruits and players that Georgia has decided that it did not want. Doesn't mean those end up being bad players. You know, we're not going to do those kinds of evaluations around here. Which is very different. It's very, I think, important to know if these two programs are swimming in very distinctly different recruiting waters right now. I saw where there's big money out there for the Alabama coordinators. This has been released. Part of the Alabama media reporting this. They're going to go over $1 million each on three-year deals for the new Alabama offensive and defensive coordinators. Steve Sarkisian in particular, yeah, he's getting like 1.5 and escalating up beyond that for the next 3 years. So, you know, Pete Golding, the new Alabama defensive coordinator, not a ton of people necessarily know a whole lot about him, although Saban believes him to be a rising star. Sarkisian's a guy that a lot of Alabama fans don't even welcome back. I mean, there was a story in AL.com the other day about Alabama fans not being so sure they even like him. Even some former Alabama players, I believe it was Ryan Anderson, one of them, have been a little critical of Sarkisian's return to Tuscaloosa, given the way the 2016 national championship game played out. But Saban's going to pay these two guys like they are big-time coordinators. So after, you know, what would seem to be a self-described debacle in Tuscaloosa a year ago with at least the defensive side of the ball, the defensive coordinator. Looks like Saban's pretty happy with his new coordinators because he's certainly giving him plenty of money. And then one more thing, as I'm doing this live at 10:50 in the morning, there is still time for people to get into our Dog Nation March NCAA tournament contest, right? We're going to allow people to go up to noon to get in on this thing. Is there any chance that we could post day one leaders tomorrow on the show? Is that too much to ask for? So we can do like a top 10 tomorrow. All right, so get in, and if you're one of the 10 best performers with your picks today, we can highlight you as a part of Dog Nation Daily tomorrow. So please check that out. Also, a lot of SEC teams in this tournament. I have to admit, I didn't want to do this. I went against Auburn. I went against Florida in my bracket. I just could not talk myself into going against Tennessee just based on who they're playing. I think I got Tennessee in the Final Four. Does that make me bad to have Tennessee in the Final Four? Connor's shaking his head yes. I do have the Vols going, I think, the Final Four, though. I don't quite see who's going to stop them, but we shall see on that. I picked against Florida and Auburn, though, so I did go against a couple UGA rivals, and we'll make that your SEC through. Okay, if we have time, I want to talk more about what Kirby Smart said about new offensive coordinator James Coley and how the offense may not look that different here in 2019. That may end up being done tomorrow, though, just because we're trying to cram a lot of stuff in. Let me, though, continue our Harris Cherokee Casino's spring coverage for a moment by also giving you a chance to hear from former Georgia linebacker Nate Trespatrick. He's excited about what's left to come for UGA in 2019. He looks back at his own Georgia career. I think that Patrick has turned into a really introspective guy. We all know the story with Patrick, how you know, it could have ended and how he could have, I think, you know, lived in infamy when it comes to Georgia fans. But it speaks well of Patrick that he overcame a lot of that kind of stuff. And he worked to get himself back in good standing with Kirby Smart again. And I enjoy talking to him. We talked to him after the Sugar Bowl, had a chance to catch up with him again yesterday. I like this. Here is former Georgia linebacker Nate Trespatrick looking back on his UGA career.
Oh, man, last night, so actually I stayed in the Georgia Center. So the whole time I'm like in game mode. I'm like in game mode because that's where we stayed before the games. So I'm in game mode before I'm in game mode at the hotel. Like before I come over here, I wake up at 5:30. We don't have to be over here to 7:30. It's butterflies. I'm doing push-ups, taking showers. It's just an experience, man, that I wanted to be ready for. I wanted to be up, wanted my body to be up, and I was excited.
Is it a physical preparation? Is it a mental preparation? What's that extra preparation kind of been like?
Just training, man. After the Texas game, it was two strong months and just training hard, going at it all for this day.
I noticed you have the Georgia G on your shirt. One way or another, the next time we see you in a football field, it's probably going to be a different logo. What's the emotion of leaving that logo behind for you right now?
Blessed. That's probably the word that'll sum it up. I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed and highly favored to be able to have the opportunity to be able to be in a conversation about the NFL. So I can't thank God enough. I can't thank my coaches and everybody who's ever done anything for me enough.
Did you get a chance to watch practice yesterday?
I did it, actually. I was preparing for the day, so I wasn't. But I'd definitely be up here because I'm still going to be in Atlanta, so I'd definitely be up here.
Is it a little weird knowing that they're doing that and you're like Kirby's not wondering where you are, that you're over here now, not over there? Is that weird for you?
It's a good feeling, but at the same time, it's like bittersweet, I guess. Just from being on the outside looking in, it's definitely different.
I think that Patrick has got a magnetic personality, and I hope that he stays close to the Georgia program. Obviously, I'd love to see him play in the NFL, and I know he's going to try to do that, be a part of football moving forward. But beyond that, I'd love to see him stick around the Georgia program because I really think that there is some wisdom gained from having had football taken from you that gives you a chance to really appreciate what you have. We all know the cliche that you don't know what you have until it's gone. That's a tired cliche. We all understand that. But cliches become cliches for a reason because they are true, or at least they are oftentimes mostly true. And I think for Patrick, I having talked to him, I do think he soaked up every moment of his final season at Georgia because he knows how close he came to not really having that. And I'd love for that message to be reminded to some of the players coming up behind him. I think Nate Trespatrick would be a really good guy to be able to do that. All right, so the Kirby stuff on Coley, we're going to have to wait and do that tomorrow. We're just way behind on time. As per usual, we planned too much stuff to get into today. Before I do the Gator Hater Updater, and yes, I know many of you are upset we didn't have Gator Hater Updaters the last couple of days, and I do apologize for that. We'll do that in a moment. Let me also mention, you may have seen the Dog Nation story, Jaden Hunter, Georgia linebacker, who we actually talked about on DN90 a couple days ago for kind of a cool spring workout video. Got into a little bit of a mess last night. Looks like he was arrested for what I think it's going to end up being the most serious thing, a suspended driver's license. So you can read the Dog Nation coverage for more details on that for Hunter. Hopefully he can get that cleared up and taken care of, and we'll see what's next for him. A linebacker a lot of Georgia fans would love to see as a part of the action. So check that story out at DogNation.com. And it has now been 873 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We love bringing that to you as part of our Gator Hater Updater, and we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily. And on video.